going on there?
Okay, someone just, did someone join us while we were putting
Hi,
on
Mike.
The course?
Pam Caronchio, Energy Coordinating Agency in Philadelphia.
Okay, great. Okay, well, we have some people from the Northeast and West and South and the Midwest today, so that's great. And we'll have post-session notes and recordings for those who want to listen later. We always start these with announcements from EPA, and of course, we've been promising this RFP that EPA issues to come out momentarily for the last 3 weeks. So, Glo, have you heard anything at all?
Boy, you know I haven't. I emailed Joe this morning, too, Joe Bruss, our coordinator at headquarters, and I haven't heard back, so I don't have any updates. I've got my computer here in front of me, and I'll let you know. I'll kind of break in and let anybody know if he replies while we're talking here, but right now I have no updates, so it's the same as before where he expected it within the next couple of weeks, and, same old thing.
It's not unusual. It's not unusual. The first thing we all probably are thinking is, does this have anything to do with the sequester? But I doubt it. I doubt that. I think the money, this is last year's money, I believe. So I don't think that would affect it. What might affect it is if the sequester goes in and they do a 5% cut, they may award one less program, or they may cut it down a little bit. But I don't think it would affect the program in terms of go or no go. The beautiful thing about this program, and this started 10, 15 years ago when they were developing it, they wanted to keep it small and non-political for a good reason. If you kept it under the radar and you kept it non-partisan, it would survive, and it was a very smart move. They didn't want to make it too big. Someone just joined?
Hi, this is Autumn from Zender Environmental in Anchorage, Alaska.
Oh, great. Yeah. You missed our discussion on mosquitoes. We could have used your input on
state bird.
American mosquitoes.
That's New Jersey's, too.
They have... everyone says they've got huge mosquitoes in Alaska. So, someone told me, I hate to divert from recruitment, but someone told me, he was in here the other day from Minnesota, he said bounce soft sheets. He was a hunter, and he said fabric softener sheets. We were talking about mosquitoes, and he said, just put those sheets on, and he said, they repel mosquitoes for some reason. And he said the downside is they attract animals. He was a hunter, and instead of using deer scent, they hang up. This sounds really weird. Maybe they've been drinking too many beers, but he said they hang up cleaner sheets around, and it attracts the animals. I don't know.
That's from 6 to 8.
Never heard that one before, but anyway, next time you've got a lot of mosquitoes, try the cleaner sheet, the bounce softener sheets. Glow indicated that the announcement has not been made for the RFP, but it will be shortly. They keep indicating in the next day or in the next week, and we anticipate it to happen. It's not unusual for EPA. It's fairly typical. The interesting thing is they've already announced the clue-in sessions. They're going to have one on February 28th and then one on March 7th. I'll put those in the notes. You may have all gotten the announcements about those. And these are, hour and a half sessions that they have every year. And Joe has a PowerPoint presentation. And he basically, did someone just join us?
Green Team.
Green Team, great. You're in Baltimore.
Bridgeport.
Is that it?
Bridgeport, Connecticut.
Okay, good. Good. They have the clue-in sessions every year, and they go PowerPoint by PowerPoint through the entire RFP, and they talk about what they're going to be looking for and how the points are scored. So it definitely is something you want to attend. Not so much on what will get you a good proposal or a good program, but definitely what you need to address. And they will probably be telling you things like, make sure you address every line and dissect that RFP so that if it asks for a question, you answer very specifically to that question. So, but after the RFP comes out, the difference between our little working group and this clue-in is we're going to be looking at strategies to make successful programs, which will be maybe how you address some of these issues, not so much that you have to address them and how many points they score, but what's the best strategy for addressing those issues. So, but we'll make sure that everyone, you all want to attend one of these. They're basically repeats, the 28th and March 7th. So I expect that they're going to have this RFP out before the 28th. So it should be coming up really soon. He's going to discuss it. We'll also find out the due date, if they've revised that or not. But it looks like it'll probably be a fairly short fuse. So we'll want to make sure we're prepared. The good point is that we've talked about every other week is it does give you an opportunity to talk to your regional coordinator if you haven't done that. And we always put their names, it's redundant, we put their names in the notes so that if people have not contacted their regional coordinator, they contact them. And in fact, even if you've got a grant, some of you that have grants, it wouldn't be a bad idea just to call them up and say hello and see how things are going. We meet once a year in August, September, and you get to see them. But some of the coordinators don't get a chance to get to know their grantees as much as they would like to. So it's a good time just to say hello. You don't even have to have anything to talk about. Just let them know how the program's going and when your graduation is going to be, and invite them to the graduation if they'd like to come. And they may have some, oh, while I've got you on the line, they may have some questions that they may want to ask you. As far as announcements go, of course, we've repeated this before. The Green Jobs Conference is in April, 16th to 18th. That's a good general conference. It's not going to be so much on brownfields or on job training as much as it is about green jobs. It's a neat conference. It's in Washington. We'll post the information on the session notes. If you want to get to know the activists in the field, these are people, it's a very political conference. It's non-political, but it's supported heavily by the Steelworkers Union. They actually do a march on the Capitol, and they have an awareness day, and it's kind of an interesting working in the government for me, it was interesting in the past to go to this meeting because all of a sudden there were gospel singers and there were union organizers and there were community activists, and it's quite different than anything you'd go to. And the group is very active in terms of green jobs, not so much in environmental workforce jobs. It's environmental workforce is a subset of green jobs. They're looking at good, meaningful jobs in the U.S. And, of course, energy and environment is one of those. So it's a good general conference. It's not going to give you a lot of good meat in terms of your program, a workforce development and environment program. The one you want to go to for that is in May 15th to 17th, and that's Brownfields. And we're going to have sessions there and booths, and there'll be a lot of working sessions in terms of brownfields. A lot of employers, I would say if you need to get clearance to go to someplace this year, this is an important conference. So I would say the two conferences, if your grantee, they write into the grant, they want you to come to the annual grantee meeting that we sponsor in Washington every year. That's almost mandatory. But then if you can get away in May, this is a great conference. It's going to be in Atlanta, and all the EPA people will be there. Your regional reps will be there. They all have hospitality suites, and they encourage you to spend some time with them, and there's a lot of good sessions. So if there's something that you're able to go to. That's the thing. One of the what we wanted to talk about today, and we've talked about this in the past, but it's I consider this the second most important aspect of your job training program, whether you have one or if you're planning on developing one, and that's this whole idea of participant recruitment, recruiting your class, your input into your program, different terms that you might apply to it, the old garbage in, garbage out, or good people in, or choosing your team. It's just so important in terms of having the right group. They will make or break your program. And for those who have programs, and I'd like to ask some of them in a few minutes about how they approach this, but how you get the right people in your program. When these programs first started, there were some real disasters because they were going to one stops and saying, you just give us the people and we'll put them in the program. Mm-hmm. And they weren't vetting, they weren't screening, they weren't testing them the way they should have, and they were having huge incompletion rates, people dropping out of the programs, the people that get through the programs, they had a hard time placing them. And those programs that were very selective and stepped back and thought very carefully about their recruitment strategies were doing very well. And I think people came to the resolution that, oh, yes, we have got to be very, very selective. And the reason is we've got very limited resources in these programs, a very small amount. And they're only, we might have 12 or 15 chairs, and we may have 100 people that want to occupy those chairs. So we, unfortunately, can't admit everyone. It's different than a lot of jobs programs where they just take people in, they train them, and they push them out. This is a program where you have to think of it as very selective. We have very limited sources. If we could train everyone, it would be wonderful. If we had unlimited, if these grants, instead of being $300,000 or $3 million, we might do some sort of training program and find some people different types of jobs. But it is just so selective. So the question is how are you going to set up your recruitment program? And when you're if you've got a program or you're writing a program plan, you've got to think these things through. What is going to be the target group you're going after?
Yeah.
Are you going after a community? Are you going after a type of person, like an ex-offender or women or handicapped? Or are you going after veterans? Or are you going after an economic situation, a set of underserved populations? So those are many of your programs may be zeroed in on a certain section of a city. So you're really zeroing in on a community that's underserved. Some of you may have bigger programs that they're focused on ex-offenders or on veterans or on handicapped or handicapped veterans or women.
Okay.
So that might be a broader program across a city or across a region, but it's focusing on a certain demographic. Or you may have it on certain socioeconomic conditions. Whether it's a Hispanic population or an Asian or some very specific populations. And some of our grantees have gotten very specific. We've got up in the Northwest, we've got the women's program focusing on underserved populations of women and a great program. We've had some ex-offender programs. We've had some veterans programs. And it doesn't matter what kind of program you have, but you're going to want to define that program and be very specific. This is who we're going after, and this is the region that we're going to go after these participants in. So they don't talk about enunciating or spelling out your recruitment program, but you need to do it because the people who are looking at these grants are saying they're going to ask these questions. Well, are you just going to take anyone who's coming in the door? Or, how well have you really planned this out? And if you've planned it out well enough, you've zeroed in on your target group. And the reason you've got to define that target group is you've got to design your curriculum to fit that target group. If you're going to let everyone in, you're going to have classes that may have some veterans have tremendous experience and knowledge, and you may have some underserved populations or ex-offenders who need tremendous amount of remedial education. So you get into a chemistry course or a sampling course, and you've got one person on the left side of the room who is very knowledgeable and has math skills you need, and someone on the right has no math skills. And it makes the whole program extremely difficult unless you design around it for stratifying your program or having remedial training so everyone comes up to speed. Many of these courses, you've got to have a similar level of experience and knowledge and ability to make that work. So when you're designing that recruitment program, if you're going to go after, say, a certain demographic or a certain population group, you want to also ascertain how are we going to narrow that down. And a lot of programs do it by testing. They do an eighth grade equivalent, for example, a TAB test, some sort of aptitude test to measure are they a successful candidate. Because, again, if they're not a successful candidate, you're going to get through the program, they'll drop out of the program because it's too hard. And this is, I've been talking to people in the Boston area about the problem with a lot of programs, and this is the problem with community colleges where kids and universities, kids are going in, they don't have the skill base, and they have to take incredible amount of remediation, and they get overtaxed, and it takes them 6 or 7 years. They can't do it, so they end up dropping out. So you have these huge dropout problems that could all be avoided if you're very selective in recruitment. And again, it sounds a little bad to say, well, you're being kind of snobby, you're only taking certain people in. Well, the problem is we only have 15 seats. We only got 12 seats. So it's not that we're being discriminatory or being snobby or being elitist. It's just that this is free. And we would serve everyone if we could, but we have such limited funds, we have to take those who have the highest probability of success. And that certainly means knowledge and skills and experience. But when you look at the recruitment issues, there are some other factors that come into play. And most of the well-heeled grantees will say, number one on the list is really reliability. Are they going to show up every day? Are they going to come through the program? When the program gets a little tough, are they going to just say, the heck with this? Do they have the discipline? Because they're going to have to, if they don't have the job skills, you're going to have to teach them. And if they don't have the discipline, they're not going to be able to succeed not only in getting through the class, but once they get on the job. And if they get on the job and they're not very good participants or employees, it's going to reflect back on your program. So many of the grantees will say that discipline and reliability is number one, and they have designed some of the programs, such as OAI in Chicago, have purposely designed their recruitment program that weeds out or vets those who are most reliable and disciplined. And how do you do that? You have a series, which some people might term, the participant may say, this is a big waste of time. Well, it may be for that person, so they don't go to all of these events, so they are vetted out of the program. But those who say, this is tough, but I'm going to do it because I really want it, they have extremely high success rates. So what am I saying? You have an information night. Then you have a hospitality night. Then you have a night you fill out questionnaires. And then you have another night that you have guest speakers. So we've got this long kind of drawn out vetting process that if you were to just describe this to someone, they'd say, this is a lot of work for nothing, and it's a waste of time. But what happens is if you have, they were doing a garden program, they had a big public, and it was area-wide in Chicago, so they had 1,000 people who were interested, they were able to vet that down to 100 just by going through this process of having to go through several hoops to get to the next step. And many of them didn't, after they had to fill out a form, that dropped from 1,000 to 600. It starts dropping very fast. But the result is, at the end of that road, the people that you have in front of you in the room have fought to get in that program, and they're going to stick. They're going to be reliable, and they're going to be disciplined. Now, in that process, you're also going to find out if they have the skills and knowledge and experience that are required to successfully complete the program, and that's using some sort of a standardized aptitude test. And, of course, depending on your program, there might be questions of health and physical ability. If you've got a program that requires sit-up suits and heavy lifting, that might be something you're going to have to be concerned about. So these are all factors in this whole idea of recruitment. And, of course, you say, well, how do I get the people in the program? And I think that might be that whole issue of marketing and recruitment is something we can talk about at a later date. Recently, we had a question on the listserv that GLOW sent out about recruitment brochures, and it was interesting. As you look through the recruitment brochures that different grantees have, some are marketing-oriented, talking about the program in general, and there are some that are very student-oriented, and it's very specifically for student recruitment. The one that stood out to me is Camden County up in New Jersey. They have a great student recruitment program brochure, and it's done through the community college. And it talks about the program, and it talks about what to expect. This is basically a construction job, and it talks about come in and see us and sit down and talk to us. What's going to be required, that you need to be a citizen 18 years older, you're going to have to take skill tests, you're going to have to be negative on your drug tests, there's going to be background checks. So they're starting the vetting process with their brochure. So someone picks this up, and they're going to see these things, they're going to say, I'm not even going to try to get into this program. It's well enough defined about what they're going to have to go through. It's a three-month program. And when you get into the interview, then you start talking about those issues such as, what about child care? Are you going to need child care? Do you have a car? Is that going to be required? Do you have health
issues? Mike, excuse me?
Yes.
It's Pam from ECA in Philadelphia. Is it possible for you to share a copy of that brochure, the Camden brochure?
Sure. We'll put it in the notes.
And that'd be great. Colleen Kokas from New Jersey DEP. I'm managing that grant. So if anyone wants to follow up with me directly, I'm happy to talk about the recruitment.
Good. In fact, why don't we talk a little bit about
that? And thank
that,
you for calling out New Jersey's brochure.
Oh, well, New Jersey has everything. it's great. Although I kid people here in North Carolina, I said, we have so many people coming from New Jersey that we'd say, I don't know about that fence along the Mexican line, but sometimes I think it'd be nice to put one up on the Virginia line. Kind of keep those guys up there, you know. Now, I'm a damn Yankee from Chicago, so I'm a carpetbagger, but we have.
I'll
so
share that with
coming.
Our business attraction unit.
just some kind of a fence that keeps people from coming past Virginia, that's all. But, let's hear talk a little bit about some of the programs. What do you all feel about this whole vetting process? Is there anything that any of you have found useful?
We've found, Pam again from Energy Coordinating Agency, we've found it's really important to really explain to people what the job is. So we usually do an orientation before the application process where we try to really get into the nuts and bolts so people know exactly the kind of conditions they're going to be working under and exactly what they're going to be responsible for. And that's really helpful because not all people want the kind of physical labor that some of the positions are or just the kind of working conditions. So it helps us narrow down good participants who really want what we're training for.
One of the issues is you, and particularly with the WIBs, they want to bring in the one-stops, which is really good. Early on, though, if all you do is rely on one-stops and referrals, the problem, one of the things that makes the environmental program stand outside from regular Department of Labor programs is it's really challenging. And it's not that everyone could go through this program and it's going to work for them. It's just there's a certain type of person that flourishes in this program and a whole lot of other people that once they got into it, they'd say, I didn't think I was going to get into this. You know, so it's a little different. So you, in the end, you have to have kind of a vetting, a personal experience with the participants. I think that some of the grantees go to great lengths to get to know the families that are, and I'm saying families, not participants, the families that are in the program. The nice thing about these programs is they're small. You might have 10 or 15, maybe 20 people in a program, and everyone gets to know each other. And there are cases where people go to people's houses and people go to pick them up, and someone needs a babysitter, and the kids end up in the classroom, and all sorts of things like that go on. And that's okay, because they end up, by the end of the class, they're really a family, and they're helping each other. And once one gets into a company, he might act as a referral agent for some of the others. So it really, you look at it on a very personal level, rather than the larger type training programs where just pushing people through and kind of making, you know, cookie cutter type of thing about this. So have any of you tried these tryouts at all that I was talking about? It takes a lot of work to do it. Of course, it's predicated on the fact that you're going to have a lot of applicants. A program like this, you might, and we'll be talking about this at another time, you could market this program and as this brochure that Colleen was talking about with Camden. You can market the program, but it's a question of how many people are going to be interested in it. And that's a good question. And how do you go about marketing this program? Do you do it at, you just put brochures out at the one stop, or do you have a radio show, or do you, JFY used to put ads in newspapers, and they would have people responding to those ads.
Oh, about posting? Yeah, well, I saw yours. I didn't see
it. How do any of you out there go about reaching your target communities?
Yeah, but with some instructions about what needs to.
Any ideas?
Mm-hmm.
Well, the I think you do a combination of everything above is what we had talked about before. You do the brochures. You can get on public awareness on radio shows. You work through the community colleges. You certainly work through the one stop. But another very important thing is to work through the community groups. And we talked about it a couple of weeks ago, working with the community and how important that is. If you're working through the faith-based organizations, we find that in some communities, particularly if you have a community-based program, it is so important to work through the faith-based organizations. And you bring the brochures into the pastor or to the community leader, the informal community leader, and you say, we've got this program. These work really well in community-based programs. If you're going into a certain section, for example, Hunter's Bay Point, you go in, you find out the community groups that are working, you bring your brochures, you talk about it, you ask when they're going to have a meeting, see if you could talk in front of the meeting, and it becomes a word of mouth. And you're basically not even advertising on a broad base because you're looking at the community. So you're going in and you're going to have these community meetings, you're going to these faith-based organizations, which is part of your community involvement plan, and you're going to be talking about what you're doing. And then those people are going to be going out and looking for the people for you, and they'll be referring. Once you get a class or two classes going through, you're going to get a whole lot of referrals of cousins and brothers and friends that will be coming in. And it becomes a self-sustaining type of program. So it'll expand once you get started. But one of the things, and we're going to conclude here, one of the things that's important is that you want to, if you're going to be writing a proposal, you've got to figure out a way of spelling this out, that this is what you're going to do, not just that you're going to recruit from the community. It's like, how are you going to recruit? Who are you going to go after? How are you going to vet? And the readers of these, for those of you who are going to be applying for grants, is you've got to show them that you're very specific. This is what you're going to do. This is how you're going to do it. And name names, if you've got working with community groups, name organizations, and that'll also help in the community involvement portion of this. But you're going to lay out a very specific plan so that when they see it, they say, oh, we know who they're going after, why they're going after them, and how they're going to vet them. And we can see that the way they're doing this, it's going to be a very clear-cut path, and those people at the end of that path are going to be successful in this program. So, we burned up the half hour, and it's going to go too fast. I'll include a copy of this, and also, if it's all right, Colleen, we'll put your contact information so they can contact you about that recruitment brochure that we talked about today. So, any comments before we conclude?
Go ahead.
I just wanted to say that I did not hear from Joe since we've been talking. So, Mike, if I get any updates before you send those notes out, I will send those to you so that you can include it.
Will do.
Mike, the only thing, this is George Lewis in Pittsburgh, is that our criteria, the thing that we use to vet, is also hurting us on the recruitment standpoint because it's hard to find people to meet the standard.
Right, right. You wouldn't, it's something you wouldn't have expected, would you? Because you've set some high standards, which is good, which points to the need for a more extensive marketing and recruitment program, it sounds like, which is tough.
Yeah, and also the need to have a remediation partner or to have another grant someplace that prepare the people to come into the program.
Yeah, you're exactly right. You're exactly right. I remember conversations I've had with particularly chemistry professors in this way. They say, the worst nightmare is when I walk into a class and I see this huge divergence of knowledge, skills, and abilities. It's petrifying to the lowest common denominator. And it breaks my heart because there are guys in this class that could handle this and we could go so much faster. But that's where that remediation comes in. Exactly right. Well, listen, we'll see you all in March. Our next one is March 6th, and hopefully we'll get the RFP out before then.
Okay.
We'll talk to you then.
All right, bye.
Thank you. Thanks, everybody.